Hi everyone, and welcome to a brand new show with me, Danny. Today we will interview a special pianist and composer from Brooklyn, New York. Her music has been described to be graceful, flowing, elegant, and refined. Please allow me to introduce Shoshana Michel. Shoshana, I'm very excited to interview you today, and to all our listeners on Music Lake Radio, and also our viewers on YouTube, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Danny, for having me. I appreciate it.
I would like to ask you the first question. Can you please let our audience know more about you, those who don't know about Shoshana Michel?
Okay, about me. So I started playing piano when I was 7 years old. Actually, I started playing accordion when I was 7 years old. A door-to-door salesman came to our door and rang our doorbell, and my parents signed me up for accordion lessons. And then I went to the piano, and I played for years. And when I was about 16 years old, I discovered ragtime piano. And when I was 17, I got a job at Shakey's Pizza Parlor playing ragtime piano. And then about a year later, I got a job at Knott's Berry Farm and was there for several years playing ragtime piano. And then later on, started working at the Birdcage Theater, accompanying the melodramas, and that was a real fun job. And then I was playing on and off and accompanying shows and accompanying singers and doing this and that with my music. And the last few years I started recording, which was something completely new. And then just about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I started composing, which was completely something new to me and something I never thought I would do.
So, have you always imagined music to be your life? I guess you started at a young age, but how did it really work for you going forward? Like, if you were not in the music industry, where do you think you would have been?
Well, music is really part of me. I mean, it's definitely part of my soul. And I was always doing something, whether it be teaching or accompanying or playing. And I was always doing something. I didn't expect to be where I am now, but and I never thought of, yes, I will always be a musician, but I always knew I would be playing. Yes, that much I knew. I always knew I'd be playing.
Okay, that's great. My next question for you is, can you tell us a little bit more about your creative process? Like when you are composing, I know you started probably a year and a half ago doing that, but how do you do it? Is there a particular setting? Is there a particular time that all these things come to you when you start composing?
Oh, yes. And every composer is different. So with me, when I want to compose, I literally think, I want to sit down and I do it at a keyboard. I don't do it at my piano, I do my keyboard. And I sit down with the intention of composing something. That's simple. Not everyone works that way, but I sit down and I just kind of start feeling around, and whatever comes out, do I like it? Do I not like it? If it's something I like, then I will develop it. I will either, and I've learned the hard way to write things down right away because I will forget it that quick. I either record it right onto my keyboard, or I will plug in the USB stick and record it on there so I can develop it later, or I'll plug my computer right into my computer. I mean, my computer right into my keyboard, and then I start notating it immediately. And I usually do it very late at night or very early in the morning. It's usually like anywhere from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I put a little bit, and sometimes I use the whole entire thing. But that just seems to be the best time for me to compose. So it's usually very late at night on the keyboard.
That's very good to know. My next question is, just out of mind, some people think that the classical music is something for probably the elite or for older generations, and maybe pop music is for for populace, for more like the younger generation. Do you agree with that idea at all, or you think music is music?
Well, you know, I've never heard that before. I remember my dad telling me when I was young, and it's like around the Beatles time, and I didn't want to listen to anything but any pop at all because I was raised on classical music. My dad loved classical music. And then he said to me something really important that stuck with me, and he said, you should be open to all types of music. All types of music is good. Not that he followed that, but he told me that, and I started listening to the Beatles, I started listening to different things, I got interested in ragtime, And now I'm hearing that contemporary piano solo, New Age, is what I play, is considered a new classical music. And I do think music is music. And I know there's lots of younger people that like music, classical. I know there's some older people that are kind of still holding onto the pop. I think music should have no boundaries. So, and I don't like to see things in boxes. Music is music. And whatever resonates with a person is what they listen to, what they should listen to, and what they should become involved with.
Okay, sounds good. I have another question for you. I don't know, this is, by the way, one of the reasons I've created Music Lake Radio, is to put music that I believe allows people to relax, and probably if they have some spiritual healing that they need, that they can do that if they want to focus. The idea is most of the radios out there are really about putting a lot of, just too much noise, in my opinion, and I wanted something different. And your music fits in that category. That's why we play your music all the time. We really appreciate you creating that type of music, which I call healing music. Do you believe in this? Because I'm sure, like, how do you create such music knowing that everybody has a different taste, and maybe a younger kid might have a different taste, comes from a different background, but music is universal. So could you elaborate more?
Sure. How do I create this? I guess about 25 years, 26 years ago, I got very interested in the quote-unquote New Age piano music. And I've always loved that. I guess it's because it's flowing and it's classical-like. But I mean, it's pretty soothing. And I tend to go to that type of a thing anyway. I'm not into all the noise. I'm not into a lot of the music that's out there now. And it's, you know, and actually through the generations, there's always been some slower music and some more calmer music amidst all the other noise. The thing is people resonate differently with different noise, with different music. So what you may think is noise may not be to somebody else. But I know that the type of music that I create, and when I create it, it's just what comes out. It's not, I'm not thinking I'm going to create something particular to heal. It's just whatever comes out. And I'm very blessed that it does. And people have told me it has helped them, and it has helped them heal. It's calmed down crying babies and stuff like that. I just play, and whatever comes out. But I do know people have told me they become calmer when they listen to my music. And that, like I said, I have helped to calm down crying babies and people that have not been feeling well or been depressed. But again, people resonate with different things, and it's whatever they need is what they get out of my music or anyone else's. So what one person needs may be something different, but whatever they're needing, that's what they get from my music. And that's the healing part of it. And that's an absolutely wonderful thing.
That's really so beautiful.
I just do whatever happens, you know.
That's really nice. Your first album is called Soul Whispers. And the first time I listened to it, I noticed the music resembles some of the music from the early 20th century, the Ballet Russe. And then when I did some research, I realized that it has some Jewish Eastern European origins. So can you tell me a little bit more how you got into this type of music, and what is the personal relationship of this music, what it means to you, basically?
Okay, so I was raised in a Jewish home, a non-observant Jewish home, in a Sephardic home. And the Sephardic Jews are Jews that came originally from Spain, and they went to different countries. And my ancestors went to the Mediterranean and Middle Eastern countries. So that's what I was brought up on. I was brought up listening to ballet dancing music. Basically, that's what I was brought up listening to. Not music from Eastern European, because that's not my culture. But when I became an adult, I decided to become an observant Jew. And when I got involved with a group of Hasidim, a sect called Chabad Lubav, which is a very large organization, and I got involved through them, and I started going to synagogue, and I started hearing these melodies which were completely foreign to me, but they're melodies, and I resonate with music, and I'm attracted to the music. And then there's faster pieces and there's slower pieces, but the slower pieces I was very drawn to. And a few years ago, somebody asked me to perform in a woman's performance, and at our synagogue, and I said, okay, but now I have to go learn these pieces. These pieces are called Nigunim, which means basically songs without words. And I knew the melodies in my head, but I didn't know them, so I had to go learn them. And I learned a few pieces, and I played them, and I noticed people were crying, getting very emotional. I'm thinking, what am I doing wrong? People are crying. I didn't realize the impact the music had on these people, or people in general. And so I was very inspired to do more, and people were encouraging me to do more. And I performed in a few places, and then I started putting music on YouTube. And I got very good response, and then I just took the next step forward and recorded an album. So I recorded an album of 12 of the Nigunim, and people all over the world listened to it, not just Jewish people, but they're beautiful melodies. And I just arranged them however, just how I played, and whatever came out, came out. But like the people from all over the world listened to it, and it's awesome. That's really awesome.
That's beautiful. So what goes in your head when you're interpreting music? And especially, does it make a difference if it's your own music or if you're playing music for somebody else?
Okay, so I just do. So I sit down, and if I'm, like when I was learning the Nigunim, I would learn off what was called a lead line. It's just the right hand, and most of the time it was even the melody. I mean, not even the chorus, just the melody. And I would just play like I knew to play, like just came out, and I would just arrange it, and that's it. When I compose, I sort of kind of do it in the same way. And the style is very, very similar. I get a little bit more meticulous now because when I did the album in Nigunim, that was a few years ago. It took a few years to make, actually. So that was like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. So my style is a little bit different, but I don't think I really differentiate between the two. I just sit down and play, and whatever it comes out. I don't know if that answers your question, but whatever comes out. For my own stuff, I sit there and I nitpick a little bit more, maybe. But it's still, again, whatever comes out from my heart and whatever comes out from my soul just comes across my music.
Okay. Does it matter if you're playing music by yourself or if you're playing in front of an audience? How do you feel? Do you feel different? Are you more?
Oh, it's different. You know, it shouldn't be different. I think a lot of the very in control performers are just as comfortable and calm in a big group or any group as in by them playing by themselves. Me personally, if nobody's there, it's just me playing. You know, there's nobody listening, there's nobody judging, or what I think judging, you know, I'm just playing it and it's easier, you know, I don't have to worry about what anybody's thinking or saying. In playing in front of people, there's factors, there's people out there, and as much as we try not to, we wonder what people are going to think, we have to, you know, we don't want to make any mistakes, so there is a difference, there shouldn't be, but there's a difference, and it also depends, too, the audience you're playing in front of. Different audiences you react differently to. A small intimate house concert is different than like the Whisperings concert last month where I'm playing in front of fans and my peers and people I've been listening to for years. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking, but it's different. But I'd like to get to the place where I'm just as comfortable in Carnegie Hall as I would be in my living room. That's what I'd like to get to.
And your performance was amazing, I can tell you. That was one of the memorable times of my life. I haven't been to any concert like this where there were so many artists playing and you're one of them and everybody was playing music beautifully.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. It was you actually who told me about this event, so I'm always grateful for that. I want to ask you another question. Take you back a few years, back when you were... I guess you mentioned you worked at the Birdcage Theater.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about your experience there and probably any anecdotes or any funny stories that took place over there?
Well, that was actually a long time ago. I have to try to remember. The Birdcage Theater was a blast. It was just so much fun. The actors, the actresses, musicians were a big family. And it wasn't even like going to a job. It was really, really fun. And we worked under a man by the name of George Stewart, who created the Birdcage Theater. And it was just, it couldn't have been a better or more fun experience. And working for him, working with everybody else. I can't think of any particular story. I met Steve Martin, who had used to, he actually used to perform at the Brickhage Theater before my time. And he happened to come in with his girlfriend at the time, who was Bernadette Peters. And he came in and they were listening to, watching the show, because he had done that show many, many years ago. He came a couple of times while I was helping seat the people in the theater. I was helping to see Andy Kaufman, who used to work on a show called Taxi. But as far as, I guess, stories, you know, I'm working with actors and actresses, and you don't know what they're going to do. And sometimes, even though it was scripted, they would kind of say or do what they wanted to do, so you never quite knew what was going to happen. And what my role was is I played the piano for the melodramas. And the melodramas, I don't know if you're familiar with melodramas, but you boo the villain and you cheer the hero and you go and you sigh, you know, for the lovely heroine that comes out. And so I accompanied that. It was a blast. It was really, really fun. If I could go back and do it again, I would do it in a heartbeat.
How did you work there for many years, or was it just short?
I worked there for several years, and then it was time to go, and they asked me to come back, and I wasn't able to. I actually worked at Knott's Berry Farm twice. The first time was when I was 18, and I was playing ragtime piano, and that wasn't the Birdcage, completely different. And I remember a story that George Stewart, who was my boss, told me that he used to hear me playing ragtime. He said to me, "One day you're going to work for me," and I did. I had left ragtime playing there, and then I saw in, I think it was Variety, I saw an ad for the Brickhage Theater, and I went to audition, and they already knew they wanted me. But it was really, really fun. Like I said, the people working there were absolutely phenomenally wonderful.
All right, everybody wants to know a little bit about everybody's future. Can you tell us some of the projects that you're working on? Are you working on something new?
Yes.
Tell us.
Yes, and I'm very excited. And I'm actually kind of shocked because I hadn't played. I mean, my story for composing is I composed a piece for a piano student in 1991, and then somehow convinced myself I couldn't play. So from 1991 to about a year and a half, I didn't compose at all. And once I did make the decision I needed to compose, and there was a reason behind that, it just, music started flowing. So Dancing on the Wind, my second album, but my debut as a composer, came together very quickly. And I released that last September. I've already finished the pieces for my next album, and I record the end of June, and I will be releasing another album in September.
Wow.
And I'm very, 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 I'm shocked. I didn't expect it to come so fast, but the songs, thank God, are just flowing. I have some concerts coming up. I've got, I think about doing another Soul Whispers, like Soul Whispers 2, another Habanugunam album sometime in the future. I want to transcribe Soul Whispers into sheet music, and I do that all myself. So I'm doing that now, kind of slowly. And whatever comes up, you know, whether it's scoring for something or I'm working on somebody's epic music that they're doing for something and making a piano solo out of that. So whatever comes out music, I'm game.
Your second album, Dancing on the Wind, is your debut album as a music composer. And I know you have lots of great melodies on that album, and they're all like your children. But is there a particular favorite track on that album that you enjoy the most?
You know, this is funny, because I've been thinking about that. I don't know if I have a favorite for Dancing on the Wind. I don't know if I have a favorite, because I didn't know what I was doing when I was composing it. I was just composing and hoping people would like it. I had no idea that anyone would like my music. No clue. For my second album, the album I'm doing right now, I can tell you right off the bat, which is my favorite. I think Dancing on the Wind, what I play the most is people really like, is the very first piece that I composed after not composing for like 24 years, and that's When Leaves Dance. And that's the one that I performed at the Whisperings concert. Mm-hmm. And people like that one also. As far as my favorite, I don't know if I have a favorite. I have favorites for my next one, but for this one, I guess One Leaves Dance, because people like that, and I play that the most.
What are your goals for the next few years? In music, obviously.
You know...
And how can we help you? By the way, I want to attach another question here. How can we help you? People who can work with you, obviously, promote your music or your fans. How can they help you reach your goals?
Okay, so my goal is, and this, if you would ask me this 3 years ago, it's so different, but even 2 years ago, is to keep creating music and to keep composing. And I really do that. I've even thought about maybe scoring film, but that's just, I mean, this is an idea. As in any other piano soloist like myself, piano soloist composer, the way that you can help me, support me, help me with this is to like my Facebook page, to visit my website, Pandora, make a Pandora station, the Shoshana Michal Pandora station. Everybody's gonna tell you that. You make a station for that artist. Follow me on Spotify. The more followers, not just like, but you follow me on Spotify, then I get more clout on Spotify. Like if you listen to Pandora, to like it. Because the more we play in Pandora, more people like music, the more pieces they'll play from our albums. So that's, anyway, that's it. Pandora and Spotify are biggies.
Okay, well, I promise we'll do that. Okay. Did we miss any questions? And what questions were you expecting us to ask and we forgot to ask?
Yes, I would like to explain, or you can ask me what ragtime is. That was the first music I started playing professionally.
Yes. Actually, I Googled, sorry to interrupt you, I actually Googled it and I didn't understand it very well.
Oh my goodness.
So, okay. Please.
Ragtime music, that started with Scott Joplin. Actually, a couple people before him, but Scott Joplin is one of the big three, the Scott Joplin and James Scott and Joseph Lamb. And they were the big three in this, the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s. And it went pretty strong, and then it kind of started dying out, you know, 1920s. A new type of music came in called stride piano, which is Fats Waller and James P. Johnson. And also, between the early late 1800s, you had what we call the gay 90s, and then you had Tin Pan Alley. And even though it's not ragtime, it kind of gets all evolved. So what I played was some of their classical ragtime pieces like Scott Joplin. I played Tin Pan Alley songs like Alexander's Ragtime Band, stuff by Irving Berlin, by George Gershwin, like I Got Rhythm. I played stuff like that. I played what they term the honky tonk piano, which is like the ragtime pieces, and you can take any piece and make it into a ragtime piece. And I played that for a long time, and then I started kind of sliding in recently to what's called stride piano, which is a lot more intricate, but it is a wonderful piece, types of music. And it's around the big band era, around the 1930s. I guess it's Fats Waller made it very popular, and James P. Johnson. And it's fun music. It's just fun music. It is happy music. It's fun music. If you think Roaring Twenties and Flappers, that's what ragtime is. And then going into the Big Band era, which are my favorite eras anyway. If I can go back into time, that's what I would go back to. But it is just fun music. And I still play it. In fact, every once in a while at a house concert, I will still play some ragtime. And it is still in my heart, yes.
Shoshana, thank you very, very much for taking the time. It was a pleasure having you with me here. And any final word to our listeners and viewers today?
No. Thank you for having me. It's an honor. For people out there, is to open up to listen to different types of music. They say that the new age is becoming the new classical, but there's so much wonderful music out there. So just listen and use music to heal, to learn, just open your hearts and let music in. And again, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And we are looking forward to your new albums, and we are looking forward to your new music that you are always amaze us with great things. Have a great day. Bye,
Shoshana. Bye. Okay, thanks, Danny.